Welcome to part 4 of the Ryan Moss Experience. This part we dive deep into the world of the medic. Please be advised that this part does go deep into the lives of medics out in the field, and some parts can and will be very graphic. As always, we hope you enjoy the show, and remember to like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, Anchor FM, Spotify, and more. And drop us a line at abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. Again, that's abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. Now sit back, grab a little more sake, and let's get it on. We are back for part 4 of the Ryan Moss Experience. I did it again.
He did.
During our little intermission, I did it. I was like, hey, Ryan Mass. I was like, fuck, god damn it.
No, we're back. I've been enjoying this time. This sake has been wonderful, man.
It's been awesome. It's been really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing that we promised you guys that we talked about, or that we would talk about, that we haven't gotten to yet, which I think we've promised more than a few things.
We really got to get into
but
this.
Being that's a paramedic or just being a emergency medical provider, whether that's
paramedic,
emergency
nurse,
responder,
I would say PA, paramedic, EMT nurse, PMT. Let's go even further.
We can't say doctor.
No.
We're not doctor.
I wouldn't say doc. this is kind of biased to me, but I wouldn't say doctor just because paramedics, nurses, they do almost 100% of all the work, and then the doctors come in at the very last and they do their little bit, and then that's it.
Well, it's like,
I know that's not totally true, but fuck doctors, god damn.
But being on
no, they are good, though.
A call with a medic or a medic and EMT serviced ambulance, the paramedic automatically is the doctor on scene. Is the psychologist on scene?
You look at the history. You look at the history, which you had to take that. The paramedics, they had to get to. I just kind of lost my train of thought. But no, so you look at the history of paramedics, which I don't know if they taught you that in your paramedic school, but they did it with us. We had to go through a history of paramedics. Paramedics back from the early days, it was that they were actually thought of in the Civil War, and they were field surgeons. That's what they were. And then during World War I, World War II, they were field surgeons, was a paramedic. They were field surgeons. They were surgeons of the field. And then it wasn't until like the 50s, 60s, and I could be off. Like I said, you don't have your fact check.
He knows I might Google fact check him.
you might have to, but but when it came to actual field surgeons, they were considered surgeons of the field. It didn't cross over because you didn't have to have any type of medical school. You had to have like a quick access of what to do here now school, you know? And so they kept buffering it down to where now you have paramedics. And to me, it's a shame because if you're a medic in the Army, that's pretty much the same thing as a paramedic. Or if you're a corpsman in the Navy, which you also serve as a corpsman you're a corpsman in the Navy, you're the medic for the Marines. And I mean, there's so many spots like this, but you get out of the military and your occupation is nothing. It doesn't cross over to the civilian world.
Yeah.
And I think that's really sad. Becoming a paramedic is a daunting task. You know that as well as I do. It's fun, but oh my God, I look back at the school and I hated it, but I hated it when I was in it. I look back at it now and I loved it.
Yeah. And something to bounce off of what you were talking about, how the idea of paramedic was created in the Civil War, but in the Vietnam War, actually the idea of a PA was created.
Yeah.
Because that's a fairly new, even to this day, it's not a well-known idea of what medical professional
They just started getting PAs in New Zealand now.
I heard, you know, it's awesome.
I think I told you that.
Yeah, you did tell me that. And the thing is that you would have Army medics in the Vietnam War who would do a fantastic job doing what they're doing. And once they're out of the military and they're back to their normal lives, they would have all these skills, all this experience, but would have no role or job to put it into. So the idea of being a physician assistant, which is what a PA is, was created all of a sudden, where you could have someone who can do
that was from the Vietnam War.
Who can do all the skills of what a doctor can or should be able to do, but would be guided under a physician in order to do those things. So like, would tell them, like, hey.
Like they could do anything that the doctor would let them do.
Yeah.
But they just had to be trusted by that doctor.
Yeah, and it's almost, and the thing about PA role, physician assistant role, is that they do handle more of the common diagnoses or conditions a doctor could and would handle, if not a doctor having to handle all these other rarity cases.
Okay.
Where they don't have time to handle the common cases, but they can elect someone to, delegate someone to handle those cases for them.
I look at it as like, if you go into the ER, you're going to go to the fast track or you're going to go to the regular ER. The fast track is going to be for your more common stuff. The ER is going to be for your major stuff.
Yeah. And what's awesome about what we do as paramedics is you never see the same thing every day.
Oh, God, no, that's a...
Sometimes you may see the same people every day, but that's a totally different story. I do want to point out some things that we do see as medics or in emergency medicine that we would like to shine light on in the public is that there are serious cases. You do see the people who are in very critical condition on
which
a daily,
a
but
lot,
it's
which
not.
There's a lot of those.
But thankfully, it's not the majority of our calls. Like a majority of our calls, we do meet people who...
I like to call them glorified taxi drivers.
Yeah. So we can be seen as taxi. Tell me about... Dude, will tell you, we've gotten plenty of calls where we get people who call 911, tell them, I just got discharged from the hospital. I'm reading my paperwork. It says I have abnormal labs. I want to go back by the ambulance because that's the only way they'll take me seriously.
Yeah.
And so we ask them, are you sure you want to go? They're like, yes, I want to go. So we take them and they end up going into the ER, but more likely we even take them to the waiting room because the ER is packed with people who have gone
Fresno?
Through stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Being in
I've sent Fresno a couple of their ERs.
Yeah, in Orange County too. Like there are insane things that happen there. And it's like the emergency rooms are always packed. And we have to make the decisions. We become the doctors on scene.
Pretty much, whether
or not this patient is deemed critical or needs to be seen promptly compared to other patients who
I would take it a step further is like and not need to be seen and promptly and stuff, but sometimes we're the ones who are actually doing minor procedures on them while we're waiting.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's it's a great job where
it was my absolute favorite job that I have ever had.
Yeah, it's something about, and it's definitely one of the most fulfilling jobs when you know that you know what you're doing.
That you've helped.
Yeah, and that
that's a
you've
big
helped,
thing is that you've helped.
That you've helped and you've known that you've helped because you've done the best you can do. That is one of the most fulfilling feelings you could have in any job.
I know I
job.
Keep bumping stuff around here. I'm adjusting, but I think I'm done now.
I'm passionate about what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
I absolutely love
to the,
being
to the
a
audience.
Medic.
Yeah, to the audience, I know there's a lot of bumping around. I keep trying to adjust some sounds here, but I'm in it to win it.
Yeah. No, it is an unbelievable feeling knowing you help someone and at the end of the day.
Well, I mean,
it's worth
we have our paramedic stories, and like you were telling or like I was saying about the glorified taxi driver, multiple calls I would get was you know, an elderly person is having chest pain or having stroke-like symptoms. You go in, you assess them, and there is nothing wrong with this person. And you're like, "What do you need?" They're like, "Oh, I need to go to Walgreens or CVS to pick up my medication." And you're like, "You know, I have to help you, and you should know, but I can't look in your eyes and tell you that I can't."
Yeah,
you know.
Well, and
so you
people.
End up doing it. You end up going to the pharmacy and helping pick up their meds because they need it.
Yeah, or you bring them to the ER because they're like, "I need more of my nitroglycerin," which for listeners who don't know, that helps alleviate or at least lowers the blood pressure of someone who's having a cardiac event, who all they need is their blood pressure lowered so
and
they
it'll,
don't
it'll
feel
kick-start
the pain
their
they
heart
feel.
A little bit too.
Yeah.
It'll and, help. It'll help advert a major cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
Or event.
And
I
some
say.
People may want to go to the hospital that night because they did not pick up their nitro tablets, but they will in the morning. So all they need is nitro tablets at the hospital, be discharged, discharged, and then go get their medication the day after.
I remember we had a lot of that in Kern County, as a matter of fact, in Bakersfield when I was working there. And one of the things we would do is we would carry extra bottles of nitro on us. Mm-hmm. And that way we could justify, because we were working for Hall Ambulance, which Mayor Hall was
heard
our...
Heard of that.
Yeah,
yep.
Hall
Ambulance. Definitely know about Hall.
Hall Ambulance.
Yeah.
But Hall Ambulance, it was owned by Mayor Hall. He was the Bakersfield mayor for I don't know how long. He's probably not now, but he's probably passed away, but he was forever, and he owned Hall Ambulance, and he would put extra bottles of nitro on there, so when we went out to those calls that, hey, I ran out of nitro and mm-hmm. I need this, we would give it to him for free. Just little tiny things like that, and it would help. And a lot of people, they look at paramedics like, oh, you guys are out there, and they I think we get a lot of respect, but they just don't know what we actually do or go through.
Yeah.
There is a movie, and we were talking about Nicolas Cage, Nick Cage, long time ago. We were talking about Nick Cage, and he's coming out with a new movie about how he was this big time actor, and now he's kind of a B, and he's coming out with a movie based on him being a B actor, which I think is hilarious. I'm actually really excited to watch. But, so he has a movie about being a paramedic, and I watched that, and it's so sad because it's very spot on to what we go through. Like, I don't know if you've ever had this, because I don't know how long you were a paramedic. A couple years, right?
Yeah.
So I was a paramedic for
2+ years.
Yeah, I was a paramedic for a while.
Still am.
And we, yeah, you still are, still yeah, are. But yeah. I was a paramedic for a while, and I saw some shit. And I don't know if you'd ever, like, ride past streets where you would see, like, oh my God, I worked on a girl who died there. And and people don't understand that, like, the streets that we work on, we also live on, and we see those dead people that we couldn't save, and we see the people that we could save, and we go and we try to visit the people that we took to the hospital, and we try, and people are like, oh, you just do your jobs, and hey, good job, and you're a paramedic, you're cool, but they don't see what we actually feel and experience, because there, a lot of it is like, I know I've lost, I don't know, countless people that still takes a toll on me, and then on the other side, I've delivered babies, and it's like, it's an amazing job. It was one of my, and I would like to give a shout out to my cousin Amber. If you're listening, she is now a paramedic. Just nice. Got her.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I know, right?
Yeah. Welcome to the paramabies. Yeah,
I know, paramabies. Hey, yeah, I should say this. She's it's actually been about a month, and I should have said this last time, but hey, I'd like to congratulate her on becoming a paramedic, joining our little almost team.
Yeah, our community.
Our community of badasses and bitches. I mean, if you're not a badass, you're a bitch. Yeah, and I come from an older school of paramedic than you do, because we were talking about the bone drill.
So. Yeah, yeah. For earlier, much earlier, he mentioned IO, which is intraocular, you would drill into the bone
to give an IV. You don't,
pretty much an IV much, in yeah, a vein, dump, but in a bone.
Yeah, but you're doing it in a bone to dump fluids, and you you know, you say IO, and I automatically I'm like, oh, you mean a bone drill?
Yeah.
To that's me, real old school. Yeah, my time was like, oh, it's a bone drill. Yeah. Grab me the bone drill, son. You know?
It is a cool thing to bring out. Trust me. And you don't bring that out on God, patients unless they are critical, and they cannot even comprehend that there's a nail going into their bone.
They're out. If they can feel that,
yeah, you're doing it wrong.
You're doing it on purpose, because they're pissing you off.
No,
We should go into that a little bit about people that were, you know, you just they're abusing the system, so you do stuff.
Yeah,
and well, it's sad, but it's please don't get God, please. Paramedic Association of America and all that shit, please don't get me in trouble.
Well, it
but,
can be tough, because you get the wrong kind of people sometimes
that need to be. I don't want to say taught a lesson, but they need to be informed.
Well, here's the thing. You get the wrong patient with the wrong provider, and all of a sudden that wrong patient makes the wrong provider a worse provider, because now that that provider thinks provider being the paramedic
who
just had a patient who may have called 911 for the fifth time today because they don't feel right and they still want to be checked out, even though everything's been checked and everything has been come out normal on the hospital front. Or someone who's just calling the hospital because they just don't want to be at home.
Well, I was an asshole. I want to interject on this, because I've been on the asshole side of this, not the paramedic side, but I was drunk. Mm-hmm. I was with a buddy of mine. I was a paramedic. Mm-hmm. I was with a buddy of mine. We were drunk. We were at his house and he fell off of his stairs. And me being a paramedic, I'm like, oh, he just popped his arm out of, or he popped his shoulder out of the socket. So I go and I tried to pop it back in and it's not popping. I'm like, well, let's go ahead and call the paramedics. Maybe they can give you a shot of Toradol. That's what I'm thinking, right? I call the paramedics. They come out and the paramedic's sitting there. And I'm like, yo, he needs a shot of Toradol so we can loosen him up and I can pop his. He's like, I'm the paramedic. You're drunk. Go away. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm a paramedic too. I'm a nurse paramedic, god damn it. And he's like, motherfucker, you're drunk. We're taking him to the hospital. Turns out he was right because he had actually broken his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here pulling on this bitch saying, it'll go back in. You know, because I was drunk. You know, if I wouldn't have been drunk, I'm sure I would have said, oh, wait a minute, that swelling is indicative of a broken arm.
Yeah. And, so, and something that I'd like to say off that too is that, like, based on like being in the field, like your experiences make the paramedic you are.
Exactly.
And you actually may be in situations where there's nothing really more dangerous than being on a call thinking you know what the diagnosis is, and then you go to the hospital and then the diagnosis is what you thought, because now you'll think every call you go on big. You're gonna get every single call, and it's now almost, you get like you put a person's life in danger because you assume think you're right. You're that.
Oh, you just have heart. You just
you're
have
that person who knows what's going
which
on
I,
with them
I've
when
done
you
that.
Don't.
Yeah, I've done that.
I'm guilty of it sometimes too.
I've taken a couple. I actually had this go because I had a couple. My favorite place to work was LA Memorial, and it was my favorite place. And it was my favorite place to take people because my favorite doctors were there. There was two doctors. They were my absolute favorites, and they always worked the same shifts, and I knew it. And I took, I think it was two or three people to these, and I knew what was wrong with them. I'm like, oh, it's just this, it's just this, it's just, and I'd go in, the doctors would be like, yeah, it's this, yeah, it's this, yeah, it's this.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck yeah, I could be a doctor. And then, of course, I had to take somebody to Cedars-Sinai, and I'm riding up there, and I'm like, yeah, it's just, and this happened. I said, yeah, it's just heartburn.
Yeah.
I didn't do a 12-lead. I didn't do anything else. I started the IV. I started an IV, didn't do a 12-lead. He was a young dude, and I'm like, oh, it's just heartburn, bro. It's just heartburn.
Yeah.
I take him in, they stick him on that table, and not even 2 minutes after I'm there, they're doing compressions and intubating because he was in full cardiac arrest because I wouldn't do a 12 lead.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, I didn't, you know, nothing happened because I was so close and I was justified in my rights to thinking it was heartburn because of the symptoms he was presenting.
Yeah.
But if I would have not had my head so big thinking that I knew what I was doing, I would have done that 12-lead when he was like, yeah, I got this heartburn really bad, but my chest is kind of hurting. But he was a 28-year-old guy. But I mean, as a paramedic,
which is rare, but something.
Yeah, but as soon as he says chest pain, I should have done that. But because my head was so big, it's like, oh, the man ended up dying. Mm. And I blame myself for that for a long... I mean, I still blame myself for it. Oh. I still think that I could have done something. I still think that if I would have done that, I could have... But then I think about it as a paramedic's point of view. It's like, if I would have done that 12 lead, if I would have seen it, what would have I done?
Yeah, you know? Because it's like there's we can do for... Exactly. There's not really anything we do for a heart attack in
not
the field
really.
Besides
I mean,
give nitro
I
and
can give nitro, but...
Treat with diesel. Drive fast.
Exactly, drive fast. Yeah. Just, I mean, that's all you can do. And mm-hmm. I keep... But at the same time, it's like that still, I should have done that 12 lead. You mm-hmm. know, I should have just put it... I just slapped him on him real quick.
Yeah.
But I was so certain it was heartburn. And I that was one thing. I was a young paramedic. I didn't know that if somebody complains of heartburn consistently over the course of a day or two, it could actually be indicative of a heart attack. I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That was something that I learned. And it was actually, we were at Cedar and they were like, oh yeah, this is actually. And the doctor was really cool. I can't remember. No, his name was, I think, Dr. Neilds. But he was a really cool doctor, and he was like, yo, dude, it's not your fault. I understand why you didn't do this, but next time just do it, because he said chest pain. I was like, yeah, I know. We were flying. We were just getting here. I assumed it was this. And he's like, yes, but don't assume. I was like, yeah, but I got the last three right, yo. You know, so it busts you. It's cool. It's kind of cool as a paramedic. if a doctor says the same thing that you suspected, your head gets big, and then it gets bigger, and then it gets bigger. But one bad thing where you think it was one thing and then it wasn't, your head deflates to a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're automatically, you don't trust yourself for the next like 6 months.
Oh yeah.
Which is, you know.
You know, it's funny. And I actually have a story similar to yours too that I'd like to share. But the big thing about, you know, what's kind of funny is no matter how well you run a call, like you could be like the badass, the superhero on scene.
The number one.
But if you can't communicate that to a doctor and a nurse in the room, all of a sudden you stumble on your story and you look like you didn't do shit.
You say the blood pressure. Yeah. You say it diastolic over systolic accident. Well, yeah. It was 92 over 102.
You're like, no, wait.
They're like, yo, you don't know what the fuck you're talking
like,
about.
I promise I killed this call, but please listen to me. And all of a sudden all the ears in that room are turned off.
You're done.
Yeah. No, but I had a similar story in that case where I showed up to a nurse, a skilled nursing facility where there was an individual who, it was during lunchtime, so all the elderly people are in the same room together,
of course,
and there was this elderly man who was in the room who's normally pretty talkative.
Nursing homes to me were always that was you were getting 90% of all my, well, I shouldn't say 90, but about 75 to 80% of all my calls came from skilled nursing, homes or assisted living.
Oh yeah, that is a place where the employees rightfully so, but you not know, saying it wasn't them. Annoying to get a call from there every 30 minutes or from your 12-hour shift.
You'd be like, hey, Linda. Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Yo, where's the patient?
Oh, they'd be like, they'd be like,
oh, it's this.
Yeah.
I've had a couple, you need a clamshell.
Yeah. Something as simple as this person rolled out of their wheelchair and just hit the ground butt first, didn't hit their head.
But they have to go to the hospital. They have to have a paramedic to clear them.
And they have to, in my case, in Fresno County, they have to go to the hospital to get checked out.
Okay. Well, in LA, San Bernardino and Kern, they just had to be checked out and cleared by a paramedic.
Well, in some cases,
I think Visalia is they had to go to the hospital.
Yeah. And if they're A&O times four, meaning they know who they are.
Okay. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's alert and oriented times four. That's person, place, time, and situation.
And exactly. So they can name all those things.
They know
who you are, where you are.
Which is funny because in a lot of
what date it is, who's the president?
Assisted living, but in a lot of nursing homes, they don't know because they have dementia.
Yeah, that's true. Which automatically they have to go to the hospital.
They have to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Well, this person has a history of dementia. Oh, they still got to go.
But I had the story of an elderly man who's usually pretty talkative during lunch. He was talking to another individual while he was eating lunch. And then all of a sudden, he just stared at this individual and couldn't speak. He was
stroke out?
Here's the thing is that the staff and everyone was trying to get his attention or alert him. And he just wouldn't say or move his eyes or do anything. His eyes were just wide open.
To me, that would be a stroke.
Well, I showed up here, me as a young medic. Oh. I showed up on scene.
You're like, I got this,
and
bitch.
I asked them what happened. And they told me exactly what I told you. And I asked the patient. I was like, hey, sir, what happened? Do you remember this happening? And he was like, yeah, I do. They were just annoying. I didn't want to talk to them. And I was like, oh.
Right the fuck
so
on.
We're here because you just didn't want to talk to staff.
Like, fuck yeah.
You didn't want to talk to people.
Anymore.
But everyone there is saying he does not act the way he just acted. And I don't
know
why he was
acting.
He's
having a stroke.
So again, young medic. And I will say that part of the story. He did have a stroke. But to me, I'm like,
did he actually have a stroke?
Well, I'll tell you. So I didn't think there was anything wrong at the time. We took his vital signs. We checked his blood sugar. Everything was great.
And taps and stuff.
Yeah, and we asked, would you like to go to the hospital? Which is something I probably shouldn't ask. No, but I asked him, do you want to go to the hospital? Yeah. And he was like, whatever, I'll go to the hospital. And thankfully, he said that. So I got him on the ambulance.
He wanted to get away from them nurses.
Yeah, I asked my EMT. I was like, hey, this seems like a low priority call. He's acting appropriately.
Yeah.
He's pretty easy patient. Do you want to take this call? EMT was like, yeah, I'll take it. Thankfully, I had an amazing EMT that day, by the way. I think he's gotten into med school at this point.
Oh,
by
nice.
The way. So,
sick.
Yeah.
I'm always proud of my medics because I had three medics.
Mm-hmm.
My first one, excuse me. My first one, he went and he's a doctor now. My second one, he's a PA now. My third one, he's a PA also.
Nice.
Those are the three I worked with. And I think I like to pride myself on, I'm always talking to people about going to school. I should talk to myself about it more. But yeah, I'm
You've
always
been through
doing
a ton of school,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's true. But anyways.
No.
Tell me about this story, though.
But like, I was, you could tell he thought something was up. And I was like, I don't know. It's been like a long shift anyway. So I'm like, just take it, man. I think you'd be great back there. If something goes wrong, just let me know. Drove that patient to the hospital. Nothing, yeah. Nothing bad happened. He was talking to the patient. Patient was happy. Patient was acting normal. We got to the...
Wait a minute. You were driving or...
I was driving.
Okay. So you decided you just wanted to drive.
Yeah. I was driving. I was listening to Outkast, whatever was on radio. Yeah.
No, see, in LA and or LA County, San Bernardino and Kern County, I never got my license to drive a paramedic or an ambulance. Yeah. So I couldn't drive.
Yeah, I did.
I wanted to, and I'm not going to lie, I did sometimes.
I mean, I had to get it when I was an EMT. It just
my EMT, but I went straight into paramedic school. I worked as an EMT part-time, but in the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I was in the front. I drove to the hospital. We got there, no problems. Yeah. And we got to...
You guys
to,
run red lights? And
No, it no? was just a normal call. Normal, it was just like, wee! Yeah, just, code 2, meaning no lights, no sirens, lights, no siren. Just driving with traffic. And we dropped off the patient. They hit the bed. As soon as they hit the bed, I'm like, all right, I'm good. My EMT will talk to the doctor, get signatures. I'm going to wheel out the gurney, clean it up for the next call.
Yeah.
And while I was outside with the gurney, my EMT came out and told me, he was like, hey, it was like as soon as you left, but that patient started seizing.
What?
Yeah. As
so he
soon
was
as
in,
you left.
He was in full-blown stroke.
And they took him up to get a CT scan. It turns out he has a block. In
no
his
shit.
Brain.
Oh my
so
god.
So he was having a stroke, and this whole time.
So he
all
was
I
actually
did was,
having a stroke just
Yeah, it was one of those things right. where it was one of those repetitive times going back to a skilled nursing facility where I talked to everyone in the room. They said this person was acting normal, but I believed the person and them saying, who knows, they could have been embarrassed or they don't remember the actual event and they're embarrassed from it and saying I just didn't want to talk to people.
Yeah, I just
and I
just
believe
didn't
that.
Want to be there.
Yeah, and luckily I don't know that person's condition up to this point. I know they got them to stop seizing, but that's an important thing.
So they
you
were
know,
actually
at the end of
having
the day.
They were actually having a stroke.
It was a serious call that I didn't deem as serious. No IV done. No nothing.
Well, but, at the same time, I mean, what would have an IV done?
Yeah, I mean, it just would have.
It would
maybe,
have actually. It could have been
like
worse,
taken off
maybe.
20 seconds maybe and like the doctor
well, not only that
like,
you think about it you could have diluted it and made it a little bit more accessible for the clot to go through
yeah but
so it, you weigh the pros and cons but I understand where you're coming
yeah,
from because when I had mine I still kind of look at it like I look back on my experience with that and I'm like what could I have done different
yeah
and I think about okay if I would have known this the only difference is I would have done a 12 lead which to those of you who don't know, well, I do want to say this to all of our listeners. If you guys have any questions about tonight's show, email me at abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. Or you can, I'll put a little question thing and I'll answer all of the medical stuff that you guys don't understand.
Yeah.
But, I was going to do a 12 lead or if I would have done a 12 lead, that would have just showed me that there was a problem with the heart. But I already started the IV.
Mm-hmm.
I might have given him some nitro. That might have helped.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe times three. And that might have helped. But it in the end, from what we found out, because believe me, as soon as I found out that he had passed away, I fucking looked into this case hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
He was smoking K2. And you remember K2.
Yeah.
And apparently, and if you guys don't know, K2 is a synthetic marijuana. And the synthetic marijuana caused a lot of heart dysrhythmias.
It is dangerous.
It is dangerous as fuck. And if you guys are on any type of K2 or anything, and you guys need any help, please email me and I'll get you. We'll find you that help out there. Don't do that. Go smoke some fucking weed. Do not do K2. That shit will kill you. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that guy. I've known, I think... I got to say probably around a dozen people now who have died from K2. Mm. K2 is that fake shit. And I mean, why do it?
Yeah.
It's not even a good high. I tried it once because I was in Florida and weed was illegal and K2 was legal. And I was like, oh, I'm going to give it a try. I was floored. I was on the couch. I couldn't feel myself. My heart was hurting and I was like, I'm going to die. And I had to lay there. I was like, I will never touch this shit again. So yeah. And the thing is, it's addictive, you know, it's not even good. Yeah. So I'm kind of an advocate about, you know, not doing that. But other than that, you know, it's still, I still make it fall on me. You know, it's yeah. like, it's still my fault because I was that paramedic. I could have done something else.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of the calls that we look back on, what gives us almost a little bit, at least closure, I guess, on our end, is yeah. that each patient we have, we don't have much time or some substantial time with them.
If you're lucky, you yeah. might have a good hour and a half with
yeah.
them.
Yeah, and for most calls, we usually, especially if you're inside the city, you may have them for 15 minutes.
15, 20 minutes
yeah, at the most. Yeah, and then you realize especially in those 15 minutes, diamonds, there's not. I mean,
yeah, well, if yeah. you're flying red lights and sirens down the street, which I got a funny story about red lights and sirens.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've told you about the we had to... Remember I told you about the soup man?
I don't actually.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. So I am anybody in, I'm not going to say the area. I'm not going to say any, I'm not going to say anything about this case because I don't want to upset anybody, and anybody who knows this story and I offend, I truly, truly apologize. But as a medic, I had to look at this as funny. I had to, it was a cold winter that winter, and
good start.
It was an elderly gentleman who decided that he wanted to take a bath, and because he didn't want the bath to get cold, he put a portable heater. It was a claw bathtub. He put the portable heater under the bathtub. Oh. The man either died of a heart attack or a massive stroke. I'm not sure. I don't know, but. If you know anything about dead bodies, if they're left in the open, they stink. If they're in a bathtub, they don't stink. They just stew. Okay. Yeah. So nobody knew he was dead for about 10 to 12 days. Okay. So the cops were finally called because he hasn't been opening or answering his door. His mail is piling up and he's usually known as a very sociable guy. They went in, they found him. I don't know why they didn't call a coroner or a body pickup, but they called the ambulance because, they call us because they just don't know who else to call.
Yep.
And we get there and we're like, you can't call us for this shit.
Yeah. And there's I'm like, no reviving.
Yeah. There's no, this guy is dead. This guy. And he was so dead that from his about nipples up was the only body that was left. Everything else was bone and stew. Okay, it was all cooking. So I was like, we're not picking this up, we're leaving. So we left, me and my medic left. We leave, about an hour later, we get a call to go back to that house. I'm like, this guy's not alive, why are we going? Because they have no van to take the body to the coroner.
Oh.
Okay, I'm like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. So we go, we have to pick the body up. Luckily, they had crime scene people there. They had already put the body and the stew in a body bag, and they doubled it for us because apparently after you take a body out of stew, something happens where the bowels explode or some shit, and it stinks. Okay, so we're in the back of the ambulance. Yeah, it was so bad. We were in the back of the ambulance. This was when we were still using the paddles with the cords from the mm-hmm. 80s, and... It was so bad.
This is the 80s?
What yeah.
Is
well, no, this is like early 2000s. Yeah.
Okay.
This is, yeah, we still had the paddles with the cords. But it was so bad. I was like, fuck these paddles. I opened the back doors, tied the paddles so they wouldn't flap. I opened the side door all the way and tied it open. And we ran red and sirens all the way to the morgue.
Because
of the smell. Ugh. And my EMT's driving vomited. vomits all over his front, just all over his shirt and pants and all in his seat. He's like, and he's trying to drive like 90 miles an hour.
Yeah.
I'm dry heaving. We finally get there. We jump out. We're telling the people, take him out, take him out. They come and they get him. They take him out. We can't get that smell out of the truck. We get it back to the service station. We start cleaning it out, and I mean, it's so bad. We finally put on full hazmats. We put on masks, and I can still smell it. It's like you can taste it, feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm in there, and it feels greasy, and I'm scrubbing. And then they want to say, hey, your truck's back online in 15. I'm like, the fuck it is.
Yeah. There's like, no way. You got to decon everything. I was like,
no, this is not going.
Yeah, you got to clean every single thing on that ambulance.
So me as the paramedic, I was like, no, I'm requesting another 2 hours. And they're like, no, we don't have enough people. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm talking to dispatch. I'm like, you get your ass over here. You get in this fucking van and you tell me if you would take this out. If you say no, if you say yes, I'll go. So luckily, Hall Ambulance, we have our own dispatch. Mm-hmm. That comes from 911. The dispatch person comes out. Opens the van, closes the van, says, fuck you, and leaves. And he decommissioned our van for another 2 hours. We did everything we could. We cleaned that van, could not get it clean. Hmm. Finally, who was it? Our supervisor at the time, I can't remember his name, but I wasn't going to say anything. But our supervisor at the time comes out. He's like, hey, we have an extra truck. Go out there, supply it, and use that one. So we get out there. We both shower down. I changed my uniform. I think I got rid of my old. It was just nasty. I just felt gross. So we get in the new truck. I'm buttoned up. We fill it up. It takes us about 20 minutes. We fill it up. We leave. They never used that van again. Mm. Ever. That's how bad it was. They could not ever use that van again.
Oh, dude. Yeah. There are some bad calls out there. And it's just insane. And it's crazy. People who aren't even, you know, dead. Who smell that way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We had one with elephantitis who had cellulitis of the leg, but also elephantitis at the same time.
Yeah.
And it was that crack. And I had to change the bandage in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
I am still. I'm still like
that. You have the, like, exhaust on.
You have everything
the air on. Windows down.
I had turned the oxygen on just to blow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
I had a lady. She was an elderly lady. She was a meth addict, a real, real bad one, but she had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. This breast, or the left breast, was completely cut off, and then the right breast was so filled with tumors it looked like it was just golf balls. Mm-hmm. But the left breast, the wound had never healed and it was just gangrenous. And I had to change that, and oh my God.
Yeah, once you smell rotting flesh, it absolutely changes your life.
It does. You can't smell anything but that for a long time too. It takes a while, and then you remember it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, there's no smell like it. Mm-hmm. I had a patient who we showed up to the house, and this patient had like rotting flesh coming out of their leg, where you know how you bleed and it's bright red.
Yeah,
This person was bleeding, oozing, not even bleeding, oozing like black out of their like back of their calf, where it was green, yellow, black around their leg. And this person was severely confused, lights and sirens to the hospital, and probably had that leg amputated because it was so bad.
So we're I know we're going into paramedic stories right now. So I have it's one of the only pictures I took as a paramedic. I walked into a nursing home and they had been doing treatments on this foot. All I can say is it was one of those calls that you just look and you want to slap. I know you've had this where you want to slap every fucking nurse and CNA in that place. You just want to beat their ass. You want to go to the director of nurse and say, what the fuck is wrong with you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was bad. Oh, I gotta.
Are you looking for the photo?
Yeah, I'm looking for the photo. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Because fortunately, the man that this was, it was a, what do you call it? He had dementia really bad. So he didn't know what was going on, because if he would have, it would have been probably the most painful thing in the world. I had been called to this same nursing home, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. One, it was a G-tube that had maggots in it. Mm. The other one was a wound that had maggots in it. And mm-hmm. then this one was one, I don't know why my pictures aren't pulling up now. But I will show you.
And while you're doing that, or if it pops up,
I'll tell you.
As I was saying earlier, there's nothing more dangerous than a know-it-all medic. who does not learn from their calls, who thinks they know everything. And it ties into other things. Like, I remember you talked about law enforcement on your first podcast. And law enforcement is a touchy subject.
It is. I think my problem with law enforcement is, like I said in a couple of my other podcasts, is I think a lot of law enforcement are bullies with guns. I know that there is good, but at the same time, I use the same analogy with the bushel of apples. If I was to give you a bushel of apples, 10 apples, and there was two poison ones, would you trust any of them, or would you throw the whole bushel out? To me, when law enforcement gets involved, they make the problem worse. I've never had a situation except for roadside. I'll say roadsides, freeways, roadside highways. When we have a call there, they're really good about directing traffic. They're really good about helping clean up. And a lot of the times they're really good about being first responders. But when it comes to nursing homes, when it comes to houses, when it comes to side streets, anything like that, they're the first ones who want to be Johnny Know-It-All, get in your face and want to like boss you around. Oh, you can't blah, blah, blah. I know what I'm doing, you know, and it pisses me off, you know?
Yeah. And here's the thing is that I was, I do agree with your stance to a certain extent, for sure. I mean, I was raised on law enforcement. Like, my dad was officer, my mom was officer.
I have law enforcement in my family too.
Yeah, but both of them.
I don't like them either.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd like my parents, but no, both of them.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't hold it against.
No, both of them had the same mindset of not everyone in law enforcement are the right people for law enforcement.
Exactly.
Which is the same thing for EMS. Not every paramedic is the right person to be a paramedic.
That's actually really true. I mean,
spoils the entire department.
It does. You're absolutely right. I think the big thing about, I don't know if you saw this with being a paramedic in EMS, but when it came to EMS, we knew who wasn't right for it. And we ourselves would police that person and be like, you were not right for this. Get out.
Yeah.
But police don't seem to do that. It's almost like they try to, we know you're not right for this. You need to get out. But if you're going to stay, we're going to protect you. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't protect those paramedics. We'd be like, that motherfucker fucked up. Fire that bitch. He just fucking endangered somebody's life and sit. But but police to me, and I might be wrong. I might be totally wrong. I actually would love to get a cop on here to say their point of view. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not a big cop fan. I'm not. I've been in that position where I've had fucking boot on my neck and stuff. I mean, and it's been horrible. And I did nothing wrong. I was a nurse at the time. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Because he didn't like the way I looked. So it's like, okay, so I would like to get their perspective on something. And if there's any cops out there listening, I'd love to have you on the show. And give me a call or email me at beerwithfriends@gmail.com or hit our comment section here and just say you want to be on the show. If you're in the Portland area, please come on the show. I would love to, you know, get your field of this. Because I don't want to be a one-side biased person or unbiased person. I want to take in all sides. I want to make sure. Did I say that wrong? I want to be unbiased in this situation. Yeah, I want to know what the truth is about being a cop and what's hard about it. What is the struggles of it? Yeah. What do you guys do when you see a bad cop? Is it that situation where you're trying to actively get rid of the bad apples, or are you still, and you got to be honest with yourself, are you like seeing a cop do bad because of the big, you know, the thin blue line, you're protecting these people, you know?
Yeah, and a big thing is that when I was in college, that was when a big thing about Black Lives Matter was coming out. And myself, I, like I said, both my parents are law enforcement. My dad was a lieutenant. My mom was a deputy sheriff. My mom is African American. Mm-hmm. My dad is Caucasian. And also, biologically, my dad is Caucasian as well. Is that both of them had their perspectives. My dad definitely was more towards the, definitely not.
I should have discriminatory. Worn my Black Lives Matter shirt.
Yeah, well, my dad was definitely not discriminatory against any races, against any gender, person. Not.
His wife was an African American.
My dad's an amazing person who passed away this past summer.
Sorry.
Amazing individual.
I'm so sorry about that.
No, amazing individual. And my mom, specifically during this Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
As she's very familiar being around police officers every day in her line of work.
You said she was a cop as well.
Yeah.
So I would love to talk to your mom.
Yeah. She took me to the side. I remember when I was about this was before Black Lives Matter movement, before when I
having a little too much sake.
Well, I was around 10 years old or so. I'm finishing this.
I know, so. I was going to say, pour me that little bit left.
Go for it. So around when I was 10 years old, my mom took me to a room by ourselves and told me, I want you, whatever a cop tells you to do, no matter how unreasonable it is, just do it. Because not everyone in this world is meant to do the job that they do, but they're doing it. And the best chance
that's true. Is to listen. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that totally. Because you think about nurses and paramedics too.
So even she told me she didn't have a full trust in her own field that she was a part of.
And she was working in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So your mom would be somebody I would love to talk to.
Yeah, and there's people that don't belong where they are, but they're there. And it's sad that people have to adjust to that, people who aren't in police or in the department. And it is not surprising with this day and age where we have so many cameras around, we have so many voices, we have so many ears, we have so many eyes, where things come to light more and more when they've always exist. Regardless of the culture, ethnicity, they've always exist.
Yeah.
And a big spotlight is that on law enforcement.
You're absolutely right. And you're right about they've always existed. Like when my episode happened to me with law enforcement, that was way before Black Lives Matter movement. That was way before the cops were villainized. But to me, I've always had a distrust of cops because I've always been in the situation where they wanted to take advantage of me some way or another. Like I've had cops pull me over and tell me $100 would get me out of a speeding ticket. I've been pulled over where I've been pulled out of my car and searched just because I had a mohawk. I was riding a motorcycle back from, I was riding a Harley back from nursing school. When I was in nursing school, I was already a paramedic in nursing school, riding a Harley back, and I just happened to be going about 10 miles and over the limit. I got pulled over at gunpoint, pulled off my bike in a boot on my neck because he thought I was a fucking biker guy. I was like, dude. And then I had, which, yeah, I mean, I can kind of understand. I didn't have any weapons. I didn't look like a threat. I mean, I might. I don't know. But I had little patches on my arms because we happened to be doing IV day that day. So I looked like I had IVs or drug use all over me because these little stickers. But even drug users don't put that on there. I'm like, what are you doing? I have nursing books in my fucking bag, dude. Yeah. He's like, you got drugs on? I'm like, no. He's like, you got a new... And he's got his fucking boot on my neck. And I'm like, oh, so my distrust of cops comes from personal experience. And I know when I look at like Black Lives Matter, which I support, I go out in my community and I try to support these people. Yeah. I try to support my community because that's a part of me. If their lives don't matter, whose does? You know? Yeah. So, and I look at cops and I look at how they're always pulling guns on the wrong people. The people who don't need it. Like the boy who got shot for reaching for his wallet. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. You got the, and I hate not remembering her name. But Tana the paramedic. No, the paramedic.
Yeah, Breonna Taylor.
Breonna Taylor, yeah, exactly. Breonna Taylor, who got shot in a no-knock warrant. And I mean, come on. What kind of society do we live in where we have to fear the people who are supposed to protect us? Mm-hmm. And as much as I love the people who I know in law enforcement, it's their fault. To me, it's their fault for not weeding out those bad people. It's like you have, I know I'm going back to this, but the bushel of apples where there's two poison apples and there's 10 apples. Mm-hmm. Why not, if the other 8 apples know which 2 poison apples there, why don't they get rid of those? Why don't they push them out? And it's, a lot of it to me has always been this thin blue line.
You know what's an amazing alternative that I saw actually on social media not too long ago?
What's that?
This is specifically towards this specific event where it has to do with inner city high schools.
I forgot I was drinking sake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was drinking wine. We might have to take a walk here.
Hope you enjoy it, man.
Oh, it's good. Believe me, it's really good.
So with inner city schools, I saw a video about how inner city schools had fights. This specific inner city school, which I don't know exactly where it is. I think it was in Louisiana, where these individuals of color constantly got into school fights. Like people were getting... people were getting expelled or what's the lesser extent?
Suspended.
Suspended, yeah. Mm-hmm. Every single day. And law enforcement was actually, or school law enforcement was actually on site each day, and it was not helping the event.
What were they weren't doing anything about it?
Or no, they were separating people, but there was no connection almost between the kids and law enforcement. It was almost like prisoners, where you have or at a prison where you have prisoners. Okay, guards.
Right. Yep.
And there's no bridge between the two.
That's not the way to run a school.
So this video of what I saw was the law enforcement was at least distanced. I don't know if they were removed, but they were distanced from the site. And instead, there was these dads who were parents of students at the inner city schools who created this thing called Dads on Duty, where they walk the halls, make sure kids get to class, make sure that kids are getting along during lunch, and kids are actually understood and talked to and listened to by parents. And a lot of which very common in inner city schools is that a lot of individuals, sadly, kids there don't have father figures or don't have mother figures.
You know, that to me is really, it's really a sad thing too.
Yeah, but they have this thing called Dads on Duty where have their own peer or familiar faces where if I'm African American and I don't have a father, I see this African American father at the school telling me, hey, get to class. Hey, yeah, do you have anything to eat? Hey,
I can help you.
Why are you here?
Like, yeah, I can help you.
Move on. Like, get to class. Like, and you joke around with them. You talk with them. Like, you build a connection with
them. It's a and parental kind of figure. Yeah.
And in the news.
No, I love that. That's actually a really cool thing.
In the news. I wish we would do more for 2 years straight. And I don't know what it is now. But for 2 years, there were no situations of fights. There were no violence, or
there's no physical
conflict that was actually happening in the school
because of these dads on duty,
just by people who look like the kids, just older figures of those people,
the older figures of themselves.
Yeah. Are there?
It was a role model. It was like
exactly.
The Big Brother program.
That's what I'm trying to say The sake is getting to me. Yeah,
it's a role model. It's a Big Brother.
And
occupation.
It's crazy how you don't, for certain situations, you don't always need law enforcement present to make it a better situation.
You know, one of the things I'm gonna end this part on this is one of the things I've always agreed on is take paramedics, take nurses. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about the noise. We have the pups in the room. But one of the things I've always seen is, as a paramedic, as a nurse, even when we're in the most dangerous situations, we have to, as a medical professional, we have to de-escalate the situation. If we ever use any type of physical or mental harm, we're out of a job.
Yeah.
You know? So my ultimate plan for cops would be, always have a cop with a nurse or a paramedic, always.
Mm-hmm.
And when a cop wanted to pull out a gun, they had to ask that paramedic, is there anything else I could do to de-escalate the situation? I saw this post that was going around Facebook a long time ago, and it was this woman who was literally, you could see, was in a mental state, a really bad mental state, probably a drug user. I don't want to assume, but most likely a drug user, very bad, and had a knife and had a pole. And it literally, the post, it was a little meme, and it said, you really want police not to be here to deal with this? And I thought 100%, yes, I do not want police in that situation. They don't need somebody to come in and fucking arrest them, put them in jail, put a strain on our economy to pay more taxes for that person to be in jail, when my taxes could go to having a nurse or a social worker or a paramedic go out there, talk them out of that knife, talk them out of that thing, because that's what we're trained to do. Get them into a mental health facility, a mental health place, and help them, because they don't need to go to jail. It's just going to escalate the situation when we can de-escalate it by getting them help.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I always thought, if we could get police to pair up with people who were trained that way to de-escalate the situation, when a cop walks up onto a person who might be a car thief or something like that, they could, instead of pulling that gun, they could say, wait a minute, let's make sure this situation's safe, and let's make sure it's safe for them so they don't feel like they have to shoot you. because I think a lot of the times cops go in guns blazing because that's their training. You know, they are trained to pull guns in an unsafe situation, whereas nurses, paramedics, and all this shit, I think we're out of everything. But we're going to have to go get another bottle. All right. But anyways, so that's our rant for this time. We went a little longer than normal. We will be back for our next segment in just a second. All right, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to A Beer With Friends. Again, we said a lot of stuff that was medical. If you guys don't understand, please email me at abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. If I can't answer it, I'm going to shoot it over to Ryan. Maybe he can for you. And, maybe. Yeah, maybe. But also, remember to like and follow us on Facebook and Anchor FM, anchor.fm. And we'll see you next time.
Ask the pair maybes.
Thanks for tuning in to part 4 with Ryan Moss. It's been a hell of a conversation, but it ain't over yet because there is a lot more to come. We hope you've been enjoying the show, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook, Spotify, Anchor FM, and more. And remember to email us all your comments, concerns, bitches, moans, groans, and complaints to abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. Again, that's abeerwithfriends@gmail.com. And as always, later, bitches.